refugee camp, the Israeli military just kept going back. So people are frightened, they feel abandoned, they have zero protection, and again, in an impoverished area to rebuild, which is going to cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to rebuild the infrastructure, it's truly a cost and a toll, and clearly it is put to cripple Palestinian civil society.
Mariam, can you explain who is the Jenin Brigade? What's their role in Jenin versus the security forces affiliated with the Palestinian Authority?
Right. So in Jenin refugee camp, to what the military, Israeli military dubs as the wasp's nest, we have seen a rise of Palestinian armed youth groups starting within 2021 until today. And these are small battalions. These are youth that grew up in the camp. Many of them have been imprisoned by Israel under administrative detention, meaning no trial, no charge, only torture. And they decided to take up arms, essentially, because they found that across the last decade, any efforts of Palestinians, whether it is in negotiations or whether it is in unarmed and nonviolent confrontation, has only allowed Israel to continue its expansion of settlements on Palestinian lands and continue its escalation of violence on Palestinians. So they see themselves as the force that is trying to push back. Even though they're limited in resources, they're protecting their homes. And please remember that these are the refugees that essentially Israel and its militia, its Zionist militias, had kicked out of their original homes in 1948 that are located within heartland Palestine, or what is now Israel. The difference between them and the Palestinian Authority is that the Palestinian Authority, which has been given the role of an administrative role under the Oslo Accord,
we just have 15 seconds,
has actually done nothing. Has done nothing to protect Palestinians, and actually during the siege remained within the headquarters, letting Palestinian families just being bombed constantly throughout the siege.
Mariam Barghouti, Palestinian writer and journalist, will link to your piece for 972 magazine, Inside the Brutal Siege of Jenin, part two online at democracynow.org, when we ask her what it's like to be a journalist reporting on Jenin.
Hey everybody, it's Greg McVicar, creator of Undercurrents. Glad you're listening. This is KBOO 90.7, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO. In accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Meetings are held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify that a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio couldn't do it without you. Support KBOO by becoming a member during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive, taking place now through September 21st. Your contribution goes towards grassroots community radio. Donate now by going to kboo.fm/give. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Cory Doctorow, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
And you are listening to KBOO 90.7 FM, Portland, your favorite radio station. And this wonderful morning of September 9th, we have another episode of Monday Talk Radio with Cecil Prescott. We welcome you to, well, this week.
2024. And thank you, Ender, for that glorious introduction. And you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, 91.9 in Corvallis, and via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM. And as Ender reminded us, this is the start of a new week, and today is the 9th of September, and we are so glad. Hopefully, people who are listening, you managed to get through your weekend. Those in the Pacific Northwest might have experienced some late summer heat the last few days, and maybe that was an opportunity for you to enjoy just the last bit of summer before it fades away. But who knows, you know, we may have summer yet again. Sometimes we have false starts to the change of season, and that may be the case today. So those of us in the Pacific Northwest are always prepared, usually for some wet weather, but you know, smoke and heat, all of it thanks to climate change and all. Well, as I mentioned, today is the 9th of September, and for those of you who are people who pay attention to special days, you might remember that yesterday, the 8th of September, somehow someone decided at some point in time to designate that day Grandparents' Day. Jacob Rengel and Mary McQuaid came up with that designation of Grandparents' Day as a day to honor those who have the opportunity to be grandparents. So for all of you who are grandparents, one way or the other, congratulations and thank you so much for being grandparents. Which reminded me, you know, we are in the midst of an election season, and grandparents is certainly a topic of conversation for at least one person on the national ticket, the Republican nominee for vice president, Senator Vance from Ohio, had some ideas about raising children. Now I know all of you are well familiar with all that has been going on around Mr. Vance and his remarks about families, about who is able to raise children, who has the ability to speak about family, and in his wisdom, I suppose, he had some remarks to talk about childcare. We are all faced with childcare, the rising cost of childcare, and the challenges that those of us who are raising children continue to face as we juggle work and childcare and school and visits to doctors and appointments and soccer team and all of that. There is so much that we have raising children and the challenges we all face. And so certainly one of the issues for those who are seeking our support this election season is, what are your plans to do about the rising cost of childcare? Mr. Vance had a suggestion about the rising cost of childcare, and this is just a couple of sentences he said. Childcare, but this is what he says. Quote, one of the ways that you might be able to relieve a little bit of pressure on people who are paying so much for daycare is maybe grandma and grandpa want to help out a little bit more. Or maybe there's an aunt or uncle that wants to help out a little bit more, Vance said. If that happens, you relieve some of the pressure on all of the resources that we're spending on daycare. Huh. Well, thank you so much, Senator Vance, for your advice. So, the rising cost of childcare, which is something that is rising at a rate that is unbelievable, that people find it difficult to pay for. So Mr. Vance, in his wisdom, suggested that maybe we ask relatives, grandparents, to provide child care for free, I suppose. I'm not sure, but you know, maybe if a grandma or grandpa isn't around, he suggests, there might be an aunt or uncle that want to help out a little bit more. Well, okay, Mr. Vance, that's a suggestion. Not all of us are able to have a mother-in-law who is a professional who's able to take a year off to come and care for our children. But maybe people have other ideas. You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott, and we are seeking your advice or your suggestions. Maybe you have some ideas, but I think we have a call. Someone has something to say at the top of this morning, maybe to talk about Mr. Vance or talk about Grandparents' Day or to talk about, let's see, what? Good morning. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Cecil. Yeah, you know, that J.D. Vance, people got to remember that, you know, a lot of these Republican cats, especially these family values cats, you know, they have no experience in the real world. I mean, the fact of the matter is that J.D. Vance has lied about his upbringing in order to make himself seem more relatable to the average person, while at the same time, you know, using language that, I mean, really comes from the depths of, you know, using language that, you know, that comes from the depths of, like, the terminally online kind of, like, right-wing incel community. I mean, he only understands child care or even, like, the concept of raising children within the scope of, like, a very fundamentalist, even some might say radical Catholic tradition, yes. Radically conservative Catholic tradition. So, I mean, the fact of the matter is that he's got money, and he doesn't know what it's like to not have money.
Well, that is so true. So maybe he has no idea, but then his running mate also spoke about child care last week, and he just rambled on. It's...
Well, because they don't have an answer, yeah. You know. Child care is up there government subsidized child care, government subsidized health care. Those are up there among things that are popular among those who both identify as Democrats and Republicans. The people who are the constituents, for the most part, are not speaking for the people. The Democrats might posture in the vein of being for the working person, but at the end of the day, even they, because, you know, you can't, at the end of the day, they need people desperate. You know, their corporate donors do not care about whether or not we have child care. So, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, it's up to us to figure out how we're going to do it. One suggestion that I've looked at is basically like a community child, you know, like a community child care, like some churches do it for a very low fee, but, you know, there's a lot of folks who don't want to send their kids to a church-ran daycare because a lot of them are, you know, are not, don't really stick to secularness,
right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like, yes.
So, I mean, we need mutual aid, but for taking care of kids, you know what I'm saying? So I'm not sure exactly how we would roll with that, but I think that we kind of live in such a time right now where, you know, so many folks are terminally online and there's a lot of conversations that are happening that are not happening in the real world.
That is true. Well, let me ask you before you have to go. I thought it was very insightful what you just said. What about, are there other, you know, there's a lot of elections that locally and national. Are there particular issues or topics you would either want local candidates or even national candidates to address?
Well, I mean, honestly, like the ones that I would really like to see addressed both locally and nationally are government subsidized child care,
mm-hmm.
Subsidized health care, an arms embargo against Israel. I mean, there's a lot of things I'd like to hear from any of the candidates. I mean, I just feel like we're in such a place of fear right now. As a country where, you know, we don't know how to, so most people look at, you know, especially in a liberal society, people look at politics as kind of a friendly sport.
Okay. Yeah, but let's go back because you first stated that we had problems a little bit. I think you said we're in a place of fear, F-E-A-R.
Yeah.
Say something more about that and how to address it.
Well, I mean, we're in a place of fear because we have a Republican Party, and this is kind of what I was getting to. We have a mm-hmm. Republican Party that understands that once it has taken office, that it will wield its power in a way that will benefit not necessarily its constituents, but the donor class. They will effectuate change almost immediately that benefits their donors. Whereas when Democrats get into office, they try to influence power. That they fetishize this going across the aisle, you know, reaching across the aisle. When at the end of the day, they're not, the Democrats need to effectuate power for the working class as they claim to be. But that fear comes from the fact that, you know, we're being run by, you know, this is an oligopoly. You know, it's the rule of the rich. So we're not going, people are scared because, you know, I think a lot of people for the first time, you know, especially with this election, they're realizing that, you know, especially when you talk about like white liberals, they're realizing that they're coming to the sudden realization that this country doesn't care about them.
Yes.
And so we think that, so we're a lot of people are running scared and they think that the Democrats are going to fix the problem when they might plug the holes in the dam and make it hold a little bit longer, but their corporate donors are the same as the Republicans and there is no interest in fixing the large scale problems from the point of the party.
Okay.
Which is why we as people gotta start rising up. We gotta start, you know, as they say, you know, educate, agitate, and organize. We gotta get more people involved in mutual aid. We gotta get more people involved in labor unions. I mean, granted, there's a lot of them that are beholden to the Democratic Party for, you know, like the SEIUs, the AFL-CIOs, what have you. But even with that, there's still a contingency that is people-powered. We need to recognize that voting, while important to an extent, is only one piece of what we can do, and I hate it when you know, especially like black and brown liberals will tell people, oh, you know, our ancestors died for the right to vote. No, they died for us to be free, and they thought that voting was a way towards freedom. But if that way towards freedom is blocked, then we're just fetishizing something that doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know, so
hey,
we need to recognize that we have multiple
paths towards what our ultimate goals are. And that is, as you stated, freedom. Hey, thank you so much for calling. And thank you so much for addressing the issues about what to address the politicians and what are things that you are concerned about. I appreciate your calls and your passion. Thank you so much, Santiago. And you are listening to More Talk Radio here in your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is the 9th of September, and we are about to speak to someone who has something that you need to hear. So let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller. Oh, are you there, caller? Oh, try calling back again. Give us a call, 503-231-8187, and you may participate in our morning talk show. This is More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott, and you are listening to KBOO, your community radio station, and we are in the midst of our fall membership drive. Wake up the neighborhood. Oh, so give us a call and participate, and let's see if we have our caller there. Good morning, caller. Are you there?
Hi.
Hi, good morning.
This is Francis. How are you?
I'm well. How are you this morning, Francis?
Very good.
Great.
I did already send my money in for the fall drive.
Hey, thank you so much.
First, I'd like to say that I hope, I'm sure there's a whole lot of women in this country who are quite relieved that they're not the chosen ones, as Trump likes to refer to women he intends to molest. I didn't know yesterday was Grandparents' Day. I'm the grandmother of children from the ages of 2 to 32.
Wow.
And
amazing.
Throughout,
congratulations.
I've always had the privilege of being able to babysit for all my kids, and I'm very happy that I'm able to do that. I think that J.D. Vance's mother-in-law lived with them when his kids. Yeah, you know. So hey,
I think
she's an immigrant too. So.
She's a professor. Hey. She was able to take a leave of absence for a year. And, you know, we all should be so privileged.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Now, when my kids were little, I was a single mom, and my folks had to work,
right,
you know, so they weren't available. But there was legislation left over when President Johnson was the president, where they paid for your child care if you worked.
Yes.
And that's all I needed. And that way I earned enough money to make a decent living. And my child care, I didn't have to pay for it because the government paid for it. Then I think that's what people were asking, Vance.
Yes.
What is the government going to do to help people out? And I understand that Kamala is planning to do a tax break. And that's fine and dandy at the end of the year, but people need to make it month to month.
Month to month, yeah. And
yeah,
it's so expensive. And it would be welcome if we could return to those ideals and those opportunities so that people could advance and be able to work and know that their children are safe and taken care of and make a decent living.
Yeah, and that's not that hard.
It's not. Okay.
All right. You guys take care.
Hey, you take care. And thank you so much. And happy Grandparents' Day. Thank you.
I didn't know it was yesterday, but I was with the kids watching football, so that's cool.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I'm Cecil Prescott. And we invite you to give us a call. We've been talking this morning a little bit about politics, hear what people have to say. I had a couple of questions I wanted to toss out just generally, and feel free to answer. What questions would you like answered at the presidential debate this week on, or what question would you like answered by your local candidates? Consider those. Our number's here, 503-231-8187. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning, caller. Give us a call at 503. Yes, hello.
Oh, hi. Hi, Cecil. You were talking about Grandparents' Day?
Yes.
Well, and did you say it was invented?
Oh, just a second. I'm having problems hearing. Okay. Give us another call back. So, yes, I just mentioned Grandparents' Day, and it was celebrated yesterday. I guess it was celebrated. Whoever, you know, say those type of thing. National Grandparents' Day, and it began in the early 1960s. Jacob Rangel and Mary McQuaid wanted to do something to recognize grandparents, and so they started this movement, which led to a presidential proclamation by Jimmy Carter in 1978 that began the observation of this special holiday. Republican Vice President candidate J.D. Vance suggested that grandparents might be able to help with the child care, and recognizing that some grandparents live within the community, some do not. Maybe, and he even widened the possibility of free child care by saying maybe there's some aunts and uncles. Perhaps he's thinking of those, what was the term he used? Childless cat ladies, maybe they can come in and raise the kids. Let's go to our next caller. Good morning, caller. Thank you so much.
Yes, I got cut off before. I was asking you about Grandparents' Day and whether you referred to the person who started it.
What I have are names of Marion McQuaid and Jacob Rangel. They started.
That's so funny, Cecil. Jacob Rangel was the president of the Hebrew Home for the Aged in New York,
yes,
where I grew up.
Oh,
my mother was the vice president, was his second in command, and I was there for the first Grandparents' Day.
Whoa! Say some more. Who are you? And say some more.
My name is Susan Dobroff. I moved from New York to Portland in 1976, and I've been here ever since. My parents were both social workers. My mother sort of specialized in the beginning field of geriatric social work.
Mm.
So she worked for a old people's home,
yes,
which was trying to develop connections between the children and grandchildren of the residents. So they started Grandparents' Day. And so I remember Grandparents' Day. They hired a little elephant, a baby elephant that the grandkids could ride on.
Oh.
And I remember my three sisters and I went
to that first grandparents' day, and it was, and my grandfather, my father's father, also came, and he was sort of overwhelmed by the whole spectacle.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It was an opportunity to try and, you know, recognize the intergenerational connection.
Well, that's amazing that you call and we have this connection, because, you know, the information I got was, you know, just trying to find out information about this. And I heard about this Hebrew home and trying to find out more. And behold, you call. Amazing. Wow, so you were there. It says here the first one was held at the Hebrew home in September 1961.
Was that 61?
1961. Wow.
I must not have been there for the first one. It was probably further on.
Oh, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Cause, yeah, I was only six in 61, but I know that when I was there, I was older than that. So it was probably the fourth or fifth.
Yes,
probably the fourth or fifth one. Yeah. But it was a fun time. It was kind of amazing to see all of the interaction with kids, grandkids,
multi-generational.
Yeah. How amazing, isn't it?
It is amazing. And you know, one thing you mentioned about all people coming together and uniting. Do you have any thoughts about families today? You know, today lots of families are separated by distance, you know. It isn't like we all live in the community. Yeah. So the grandparents' day you experienced back then might be something different than people experience today, where they may not see their grandparents, except maybe rarely.
Well, that's how it. I'm not a grandparent, but I'm a grand aunt.
Yes.
And, so when I go back to New York twice a year, I get to see my the kids.
Yes.
Of my sisters, and their grandparents who live nearby. My sister commits at least one day a week to taking care of her daughter's children.
Yes.
And I think the other side of the family, the other grandparent, does the same, because both parents work full time.
Yes.
So the family has to sort of jump in and fill in, and it seems to work, and the kids, the little ones, sure like the extra attention. They seem to love getting time with the grandparents, and God knows the grandparents are so thrilled.
Right. Well, that reminds me, when you were talking about your sister and her grand, of my sister, and I'm from New York as well, and my sister, it's grandparents. Is a grandmother, and the parents are working, and so my sister and her husband, you know, the grandparents are there to, you know, help with the kids, you know, pick them up or take them to school or pick them up. And you know, fortunately, there's two sets of grandparents, so they like, you know, double team, but you know, that's a lot of responsibility, a lot of work.
Yes. But what they all say about it is, it's so, the grandparents say, oh, it's so wonderful to have the time, but we're also so happy to give them back at the end of the
right,
the end of our time with them.
That's right. I love being a grandparent because you can send them home afterwards. So
it's a nice division of labor, though. It gives the parents a break. It gives the grandparents a wonderful experience, and they can. There's an end to the responsibility for parents. Of course, there's never an end.
There's never an end. No. Even after, it continues on, well into adulthood.
Right.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I wonder if you have any advice or questions that you would offer candidates, either local candidates or national candidates, about this issue, childcare, or anything else?
Oh my God! Well, it's ridiculous that we don't have paid childcare, that we don't have the institutions that they have, like in Western Europe, where it's just regular. You don't have to set up and pay for a special caretaker for during the day when the parents are working. There's got to be some solution other than volunteerism, because working adults need their kids to be taken care of.
Right. Yes. Yes, and it's, just nationally, you know, I just wish the candidates were able to address those issues. They would seriously, in a serious yeah. way, but perhaps. Okay,
yeah.
well, thank you so much, and thank you for that, your connection to with Jacob Reingold. And,
wow. Yeah, Jacob Reingold. Yeah, well, thank you for doing a little research and finding the origin of Grandparents Day. That's very cool.
Wow. Well, you have a great day, and best wishes to all your whole family.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'll pass that along. They'll all be so thrilled to hear that I talked about this on the radio.
Excellent.
Okay.
And you all are listening to more talk radio here on your community radio station, KBOO FM 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland. I'm Cecil Prescott, and you may give us a call, be a part of our morning conversation. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We began our conversation this morning talking about Grandparents Day, but we're open to other things as well. Again, 503-231-8187. Let's hear from our next caller. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Yeah, it was a long time. Anyway, I find Harris absolutely repulsive, and I'm going to not only vote for her, but this is the first time I've ever asked other people to vote for the you know, very evil lesser of two evils. And one of the few good things that I don't think she has a thought in her head other than she wants power, but one of the few good things that her speechwriters have come up with is the idea of the Supreme Court decision that basically says if you're president, you can't go to jail and you can't be convicted of anything. And I believe she phrased it, or her speechwriter phrased it, as Trump without limitations. And that is absolutely terrifying. The Orange Nazi, Project 2025, it is terrifying. So all of you moronic Stalinists like Santiago, I'm an anarchist, but I'm not doing a whole lot to create a mutual aid society. I want to do something to stop Trump, which will give us time, you know, to hopefully get rid of Harris, get someone far to the left of Bernie as president.
Sure.
But, you know, Trump as president is absolutely terrifying. And I'm horrified that some people can't be bothered to get that.
But let me ask
you. Let me say one other thing.
I want to ask you because I think you're raising some very important points. But I'll let you finish, and then I'll ask you.
Anyway, I just wanted to say, Eugene Debs said, and I used to wear shirts like this on election day. Well, I voted for Nader or for myself or for Donald Duck. It's better to vote for something you want and not get it than to vote for something you don't want, which is for surely Harris. I don't want Harris. It's better to vote for something you want and not get it than to vote for something you don't want and to get it. I think that's wrong this time. I want to vote for something I don't want, which is Harris, and I want to get it. I don't want to vote for Jill Klein. I mean, I of course I would prefer Jill Klein. I would prefer Cornel West. I would prefer Donald Duck to goddamn Kamala Harris. However, we must stop Trump. And if you're doing something really amazing to stop Trump and don't believe in voting, I mean, I have a shirt that says don't vote, piss in the voting booth. I made a shirt that said, don't vote, it only encourages them. This is not the time for that. If you're doing something that's so wonderful that you don't have to vote, I want to hear about it, because maybe you can convince me and I'll join you.
Okay.
But in the meantime, I really hope people get that this horrible, awful, you know, moralist, ambitious cop who has flopped so badly on fracking it makes me ill, who is, you know, probably a little better than Biden on Gaza, because she hasn't been taking zillions of dollars of Zionist money for the last 50 years, but she's pretty awful on Gaza. I think we must vote for her, and we must get everyone we know to vote for. I'm even giving money to the Democrats. If you told me that any of the 50 years I've been an anarchist, that I would give money to the Democrats, I would have said, I don't believe you. I will never do that. Well, I'm doing it.
All right. Okay. Well, it's, every once in a while, we have to make those type of decisions where we have to examine our principles and look at the world we live in and make choices. So thank you for making those choices and for offering a reasoned argument about why you think it's important.
I do have one other thing to say about local elections. The reworking of the Portland voting structure seems, it was very promising, but for some reason, most of these candidates, none of, you know, in my district, which is District 3, I've heard of two of them. You know, they've been trying to be governor of Oregon for their whole lives, Rex Burkhalter and Steve Cornett. They're both highly questionable characters. You know, I'll vote for them as my fifth and sixth vote, but because I know them, I can't really rate them any higher than that. The rest of these people, I have no idea who they are. They're doing nothing. I have no idea what they're doing with that $100,000 that most of them have gotten. I see signs for Jesse Cornett everywhere, and that's about all. I mean, there's no debates. There's no public forums. I'm going to have a goddamn block party just to see if I can meet some of these bozos.
Well, I think
which one of them I have to vote for.
Yeah, I think
I would like to ask them, what are you doing with your $100,000? Why don't I know who you are or what's your platform? Thank God KBOO finally has this show every day where we're getting to meet some of the candidates. To be honest, I've been pretty underwhelmed with them so far.
Yeah.
I mean, they all sort of sound like the same left liberal, public service employee, you know, very interested in a little bit of power themselves and talking about all their ability to get along with other people.
Let me ask you a question. Are there people who interest you or had you consider running?
Well, what I found out recently is that some districts we're electing in my district, District 3, for some reason, I haven't really scanned it. It's only 2 years. We're only voting for them for 2 years. Well, in 2 years, I plan on running. My platform will be don't vote for me. I ran for that for Laney Community College student representative, and I won on that platform. And I promised to resign after 7 quarters because that's what I need to get Social Security. And I will give all my salary back after either $20 or $25 an hour. I haven't figured out what I'm worth.
All right.
But so the main part of my platform will be, it's not, if you're going to own other people's houses, and I'm not talking about somebody who owns a fourplex and lives in one of the apartments. I'm talking about people that own 50 or more of somebody else's houses, or maybe 20 or more. I don't think that should be legal. It's not morally okay to make money having other people buy your house for you and then have no real rent control. So I want real serious rent control. I want massive taxes on any vacant apartment. I want the horrible Russian mafioso tore down the end of my block and has just been speculating, waiting for it to grow. I want him to be fined millions of dollars a year. It shouldn't be okay to do that to our city. There's not, you know, people need to be inside houses. There are rumors that all these low rises with, five-story buildings that they're putting up there, there's so many vacancies that you could house every single homeless person in town in them. I'd like to know if that's true, but there's no way to force them to admit how many vacant units they're holding and what they're doing with them.
Okay, you've raised a lot of points and also offered some solutions. So we are going to look for you in 2 years when you're running for one of those city council
Well, on the other hand, it's you know, the only way one can make a credible campaign is you have to have a thousand people give you $5 each or something like that to get the matching funds.
And I don't even know 100 people, much less 1,000 people. Well, far too difficult.
See, that's the... I'll
come to you, Cecil. So okay. You're going to give me $5. Okay. My name's Jeremy. All right, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. And I think a point you raise is the way you raise that money is you have to go and meet your neighbors. You have to meet the voters. That's a way to get the matching funds is to go around, walk your neighborhood, invite people for conversation, and see where you can go with them. You are listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil Prescott. Today is the 9th of September, 2024. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. We have been speaking this morning with some people, particularly around the elections, about what you would like candidates to answer. What are some issues that are important to you? Our last caller reflected on local elections and observed that many of the people running he does not know, and the importance of getting out and talking. There are certainly opportunities in the next 2 months to meet the candidates in community forums. There are different forums throughout the communities. So there are ways in which to do it. You can also listen to the programs here on this radio program where you can meet the candidates. A lot of things to do, but it is so important. And as one caller mentioned, sometimes you have to make really tough decisions, whether or not you will vote, and if so, how you will vote. And those who are in Portland will have the opportunity this November to participate in ranked choice voting, where you will rank the candidates, your preferences, first, second, third, fourth, down to 6 places, I think. And we'll see how that works. Multnomah County elections will have ranked choice voting in 2025. So we'll see how that will work out in 2025 for Multnomah County elections. But this year, Portland City Council election will be ranked choice voting. And there's a lot to learn and a lot to know about. What are some things you would like candidates to write about, to respond to? Give us a call, 503-231-8187. I'm Cecil Prescott, and let's go to our next caller. Good morning. Good morning. You're on the air. Hello. This is More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. Oh. Oops.
Sorry about that.
Okay. Start again. Hello.
Okay. Yeah. Good morning. I'd like more candidates to bring up Gaza, the Holocaust that's happened with about 200,000 people killed in the last year.
And this is... You want local candidates to bring up Gaza or any candidates?
I think everybody should, especially local candidates, considering that this is probably the worst time in our history that we don't even really realize how bad it is, so much so we're voting for the same administration to keep doing it. But I wanted to bring up that last caller said he was an anarchist who's voting for a cop, which I think is a testament to the propaganda. I mean, especially with the fact that all the Trump people are voting for a convicted convict, and they're like the back the blue crowd.
Hey, wait a second. Did you see how the, I don't know what it's called, the National Police Union's backing Trump?
Oh, yeah, I think I did, yeah.
Yeah, so the police are backing a crook. It just seems so strange. But go ahead, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, that's fine. I'm glad that you can see that point, because this is a testament to the propaganda that Americans have been propagandized. We are so much involved with our political sports, you know, ball game team mentality, go
right.
team go,
yeah.
that Democrats lose this ability to be like, oh, Kamala Harris, who people will say they'll hold their nose and vote for her, don't actually look at what she's done. They don't look at the, and seriously, every time I bring up the specifics, people don't want to hear it. But let's go over Project 2025, which is the Democrats' campaign thing, because it's already here. The unrestricted executive power is already the case, and I don't see the Democrats changing that. The prosecution of political opposition, that seems to be normal, just normal in politics now. The mass deportation of immigrants, Harris will not stop. Restrict legal immigration to the U.S. Harris has been very clear about her stance on the border. Build immigration internment camps. The original ones were built by Obama, which people seem to forget, but because Trump called them family separating, he created his family separating policy, which also used those overflow facilities, which is what the Biden administration called. So what I'm seeing here is just this, the same exact thing going on. And voting for the lesser of two evils is how we got to where we are. And Kamala Harris is taking just as much money from AIPAC as anybody this year has. And she's not better on Gaza. In fact, she said that she wants a ceasefire, which is temporary, and then is going to go back to business as usual once the hostages are released. So that's not good enough. And I think that if people right now cared about Gaza or the Palestinians, even if you go and vote for Harris, just say that you want Harris to do the arms embargo if you care about the Palestinians. Because right now, like, it seems like people don't understand how politics works. And every 4 years they get duped, and the Democrats are like, oh, wow, we did it again. I don't know why they're not helping out the working people, or why they're doing, why are these Democrats so Republican? Kamala Harris was just endorsed by Dick Cheney. You know, or like Liz Cheney, and I'm sitting here and I'm just flabbergasted that people are voting for Holocaust Harris and not even demanding, hey, you can work for our vote right now. Because right now is the time. I was saying people don't understand how politics work, because once you elect them, they'll do whatever they want. You have to get their vote. You have to get them to work for your vote now. And if we're not going to do that, then anybody who's voting for Harris just blindly and saying they're going to is supporting, they're apologizing for genocide.
Let me ask,
there's really no way to look at it.
You spoke about the national elections. Let me hear your thoughts and reflection on local elections.
Well, they're pointless.
So expand your conversation about that.
So I've worked for the Democratic Party. When I was 10 years old, I went and volunteered. I actually in the state of Arizona, I was campaigning for Grijalva. And so I saw how the party works way up close. And what they do is the same thing that they did to Cory Booker Cory Bush. And the AIPAC money just drowns them out.
So this happens
in local elections. This happens in every election. So it's like, yeah, you know what? If you want to get a group of people together, get a proposition, go build a new bike path, great, you can do that. Yeah, sure, go vote for it. And I vote for things that, you know, I pay attention to. But in terms of an actual change, anything that's going to be meaningful and impact the system that I'm trying to be against as an anarchist that's not going to vote for a cop, you need to really realize that this political system is used for our complacency.
Okay. Well, thank you for your reasoned opinions and the way in which you express
it. I just really wish people would say before that they're going to support Harris, that we need her to say she's going to stop sending arms to Israel, because a ceasefire is bull propaganda. It doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I'm just curious, and we may not have enough time, because you've spoken about the national election, and it sounded as if you said local elections aren't important. And, you know, for many people who are worried about, you know, trash on their streets and housing for their houseless neighbors, what should people do about that? Or should they be concerned about these local elections? It sounds as if you say they don't matter.
If you really care about those issues, you need to be getting involved with your direct mutual aid groups. There are communities that help these individuals out already. So instead of thinking that electing somebody who says, I'm going to get in here and clean up the streets and make living easier, and it's all the same stuff that we hear all the time, and it's just like they get in there and then they get wrapped into the game, which is either they're going to run with it or they're going to get shut out real quick.
My question is that may be true. It would seem to me that you might, an individual or community, might have more of an impact. You mentioned mutual aid. Those are local things that people are doing. So it sounds like, it seems as if you might have more of an impact on local issues immediately while you're working on Sudan.
Well, I didn't bring up Sudan.
I did. But go ahead.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, that's the thing. You know, you want to vote. You know, that's great. Go ahead, vote. But to think that this is all you have to do. Oh, we're terrified Trump's going to be in office, so we have to vote. The same thing is already happening. That, you know, when people are terrified Trump's going to win the second term and take away democracy again, just like he did the first time. So now we have to vote for, you know, another person so he doesn't take it away, even though the Democrats are suing to take the Green Party off the ballot. So there's only one party that's legally doing that right now. But this idea that if voting is like what you're going to do, like, you know, yeah, I said it was unimportant because it's not going to get the change for, you know, that we need. Yeah, you know, as I said earlier, you know, local elections, if you believe in a candidate enough and they don't get hit by money like a big city where, you know, let's just say, look, there's been all sorts of candidates that get elected. They have high hopes. They're very, the word's slipping me right now. They're like really, you know, they're ambitious, very ambitious when they get in there, and then they get in there and they turn into the same exact thing that's been going on there. That's what I've seen in my local county elections. How I see the political. And so it's like, yeah, you know what? Yeah, you can have a big impact on a small community, but that's, you know, that's that.
Okay, we have to go. Our time is running to an end. I appreciate your call and your passion. Thank you so much for calling, and thank you for what you're doing to make a better world.
So thank you.
You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I'm Cecil Prescott. We have, a couple of minutes? 1 minute. One more caller. One more, our last caller. Let's go to our last caller. Good morning, caller.
Good morning.
Yes.
Yes. I have one question. Well, it's kind of a question and kind of posing this idea that what if January 6th were successful? Going into this current election year, what do we think democracy would look like if it were successful? And I don't hear many people talking about what that would truly mean for our nation. And I think that, yes, our politics is ugly, but I think that question needs to be posed. What if it were successful?
And you think it should be posed to those running for candidates or just to the electorate generally?
I think it should be posed to those running, mm-hmm. And I think that as voters, that needs to be a question that we ask.
Yes.
And I don't think we can rely on one particular branch of our government to solve our issues with, say, Israel or war, you know, and I think that we're not addressing the fact that we have a political system that's truly broken. Mm-hmm. But my biggest concern is that if January 6th was successful, what would that mean for the people who are complaining about the fact that all we have is a Democratic candidate to vote for and no one else to vote for? Chances are we wouldn't even have that chance, because I assume that then our current president or dictator at that point wouldn't allow it to happen, is my point.
Okay. Hey, we're running out of time. I appreciate your calls, and continue to be passionate.
Thank you.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station. I am Cecil Prescott. Thank you all so much for being a part of this radio station and continue to be a member by supporting KBOO during our pledge season. Thank you so much. Stay tuned, and I will see you soon. Bye-bye.
It's a KBO of Portland, Full Strength Community Radio. This is Kabaka Pyramid representing from Kingston, Jamaica. Baby Rock family, you don't know.
Go to kboo.fm/wakeup to support KBOO during our Wake Up the Neighborhood Fall Membership Drive.